Cyril Williams, Reel 3. So you said that's my ground sheet.
Yes. And there was a rough exchange of words, but I got the ground sheet. And in fact, I think then I had two because I'd been issued with a new one. But I thought, well, this is fair, and that was his problem. But he was a very scruffy individual, so I was glad when he made a request to exchange with somebody else in another tent. But it was a very nice period there, because to get used to certain things, it was just on the Wolds. There were no other buildings at all. There was a tented cookhouse there, and the latrines, quite very sociable, because they had this hessian that was like a taped screen, but with the light coming in, it was, well, people were silhouetted there, but there were no partitions at all, so there were, I think it was a sort of 12-seater. So it was quite sociable. And anyway, when you got used to the informality of that, I enjoyed it because I was in recce troop and we were using these Bren gun carriers, and the exercises were great. We weren't cooped up in tanks, and going up and down the gentle hills of the Wolds, I greatly enjoyed. And I remember when we were, well, pausing sensibly, because it seemed to be rather a steep slope and we didn't want the thing to start rolling over. But the 19 set crackled into life, and it was our lieutenant. Can't think of this one's name, but a very decent chap. And he said, go on, number, whatever our thing was. Go on, chance it. So, encouraged, in fact, ordered by this chap to go down. We went down, and it was safely negotiated. We had a Yorkshire the driver, I remember. I was on the radio 19 set. But it was... it was really a delightful period. But coming back from the recesses of my memory is an Indian Army colonel who was posted to us, or there to observe, or there to get him out of the way because the army didn't know what to do with him. And he bawled at one point. He was in sharing our carrier. And he was talking about when I, all the time, when I was in India with the horse, and obviously it was a capital H, but we pictured that this solitary colonel was trudging around India with just one horse. But he bawled at one point, and it bewildered, there was the Yorkshire driver, and maybe just the colonel and myself, and he said, get down in the nullah. Didn't mean a thing. So the driver was moving on a little bit, but not down into the nullah. I'm not absolutely sure what a nullah is now, but it's a bit of low ground, a ditch. Yes. So he said, I said the bloody nullah, man. And right, we went. But he was forever coming out with things like that. And it didn't impress us. It puzzled us mightily. And if I can wander off again, I've only met another odd colonel. It was when I'd gone flying and went to one place, and it was a colonel who was in charge of it. It was an RAF station. We were trained in RAF stations and mostly by RAF instructors. But this chap, he said, and I think in a way it's worth telling for anyone who's interested in the army, he was there with two glider pilots and wooden face. They were flanking him, And he said, give me your rifle. And one of these glider pilot sergeants, expressionless, passed him this the Sten gun. This was the first thing. The Sten, I don't know whether you know it, it's a very crude thing, just for close work. They were made in garages and all sorts of places. And if you weren't careful, you could lose your fingers. And he said, when you land, you will throw away this filthy thing. And this is the Sten gun, a light machine gun, crude machine gun. And then he spoke to the other sergeant, and or indicated even, and the other sergeant, expressionless, passed him the rifle. And this fellow said, with the only warmth I'd ever heard coming from him, this is the British soldier's weapon. And this was it, he said. That is the proper weapon. And that's the only thing I remember of him. But I think this is another colonel. And I've nothing against colonels. I've met some splendid ones. But I think occasionally the army didn't know what to do with people who were slightly crazed, possibly.
Yeah.
But anyway, that was that. I digress, sorry.
So what were they training you at Malton?
It was really exercise in rolling country. I mean, the walls are marvellous. And the fact that instead of going round in tanks, smelly, and when they've got the visors down, they get hot and there's not much to see. But it was a lovely sunny period. I mean, it's like looking back on childhood. The sun seemed to shine every day. And here was I, sitting in a Bren gun carrier, most of the time sitting at the radio. Most of the time it wasn't on. So most of the time just looking at the scenery. So it was just like a holiday break.
So what sort of recce training had you?
Well, nothing special. And I believe at that time the army formed a new regiment that wasn't very long lived. I think it was the reconnaissance regiment. Mm-hmm. And these were more highly trained. And I suppose I liked wandering out, and in fact going ahead of the exercising tanks, it was interesting, and there were some light scout cars, the sort of thing that Rommel liked, so he kept one, captured one as his personal thing, and you sat at an angle, and so that if you were in a lane, and you ran up against, say, a tank, then, because you're sitting at an angle, and I think, vague about this, I think probably it had five forward gears, but three reverse gears, so that you could shoot the thing back. But I must have been useful in the reconnaissance troop. I'd got very good eyesight then. I liked wandering around, and I liked, in fact, when we were looking for enemy, in inverted comma, tanks, I'd spotted aerial above trees. And I remember as a sergeant, he asked for binoculars. He was looking around, he said, I can't see any tanks at all. So I said, well, I can see three tank aerials along there, and pointed the direction. So he barely could detect them, you know, with the binoculars. So at least I was useful like that, and I was keen.
Would you rather have been tank crew?
When I got the opportunity later on, they call them ACIs, Army Command Instructions, that you're supposed to look daily. And this was asking for volunteers for the glider pilot regiment. And so this was, while not as good as being in the RAF and flying a powered plane, I thought this would be fine. In fact, when I was on a barracks, the barrack square at Tidworth, I remember seeing a glider train going over, and I thought, oh, great, you know, and if the opportunity came up, well, the opportunity did come.
Right. And that was when you were at Malton, was it? Where were you when you saw this notice?
Yes, it must have been there, and I'm just trying to think. I can't picture the notice board in this tented camp, so maybe it was Newcastle. Anyway, it wasn't applying, and then, you know, you go the next day. It was, you've got to wait, and your own unit tried to discourage you for volunteering. And in fact, I think about a dozen Fife and Falfers volunteered for this, and when I went to Cardington for the aircrew selection, there was another odd colonel.
Can I just be clear? When did you leave Malton? You got permission to leave the Fife and Forfers and join the glider training, did you?
Well, to volunteer for it. Most of us, didn't get accepted. Mm-hmm. I'm just trying to think where I was. Yes, it must have been there. No, I left from a Nissen, not from a tent. But anyway, when I was told that I think about five of us from the Fife and Forfers were accepted to go for the tests, this was not the, you know, getting through. It was not easy getting through.
Where did they hold the tests?
Cardington in Bedfordshire, and where our airships used to go from, the ill-fated R-101 was based there and flew from there on its final voyage. And it was the normal selection board, RAF wing commanders, but because it was for an army unit, there was a colonel who was nominally in charge. And he started off by saying, you're volunteering because you're discontented with the tanks. I said, no, sir. And I said it with force, because that was not true. And I'd enjoyed, and I'd got on with them all, with the exception of that corporal and that thieving person. Yes, they were a good bunch. And in fact, when I went off, they got out to take an early train. They all got up to see me off, which I thought was great, really. And in fact, this is why I would not like to have been RTU'd, returned to unit, you know. I thought you'd gone, Williams, you know.
Yeah. So what's... You were saying that it was a colonel, was it, who was interviewing you for the gliders?
Yes.
Were they part of the army or the RAF?
The glider pilot regiment was an army force. Some of the pilots, the senior pilots, had been in the RAF, like the chap who was the colonel and then became a brigadier. He'd been in the army, in the Air Force pre-war, and he belonged to the then equivalent of the Red Arrows. But he'd had a crash, and he was judged unfit to carry on flying in the RAF. So instead of taking a ground job, he got into the army, you see. So it was a natural when they formed the glider pilot regiment. No, the only time that the RAF and RAF pilots came in is after Arnhem, when so many were killed and wounded, and they got hold of these people who'd finished their training in Canada and the United States, and kicking and screaming, they were given a fortnight's military training, I'd heard later on. So
So what sort of test did they give you to be a glider pilot at the initial, you know, when you were being tested?
Well, intelligence tests and then agility tests. There was like a mock-up of a cockpit and a screen, and there was like a control column, and there were the pedals, and on the screen you'd got to waggle this about, and your feet as well, to keep centralized, to check if your reactions were smart enough, I think. There was a medical test, and that's where I'd been failed on colour vision for the Air Force, and you'd to fill in a form. Have you ever volunteered and been accepted for pilot training before? I put no, because if I'd put yes, then they would have, I would have gone no further. And then when the colour vision test came, and what it is, the lights are off and twinkling lights appear, and I don't know whether it was a doctor or just a technician, but it was a lazy doctor or technician. I'm most grateful, because he said, what's this? Lights red. What's this? Green. What? Red, sir. And that was it. It was just allowed, instead of giving me a thorough check on that. And, there was rather more to it than that. There were written papers as well. But anyway, I'm wandering away. I mean, if I could talk for hours on the tanks, I could talk for days on the the other.
Okay, So you passed that test. Did you have to wait a long time to hear?
No, you heard straight away that you were accepted, but it didn't mean you were transferred straight away. So I had to go back and... No, I don't think we did go back. Most of the people, they didn't get through for one thing or another.
But you did. So that
yes.
meant you were sent where?
A dreadful place. Fargo, and that was near Tidworth.
Oh, okay.
F-A-R-G-O.
Oh, right, near Tidworth, yeah. So what sort of a place was that then? What sort of accommodation did you have?
Well, we had Nissen huts, but instead of, I think it was 24 in a hut, we were down to 12, and luxury of luxury, just like the RAF, we had sheets instead of blankets. So, might have made us soft, and that wouldn't have done.
So, what was your first impression of the glider pilot regiment then? Different sort of people?
Yes, I think so. Highly motivated, and most of them had actually volunteered for the RAF but been accepted. And then the RAF decided that the army decided that because so many people were transferring to the RAF and it was really bleeding off the more able people, and so they stopped that. So a lot of the people had volunteered and been accepted for RAF training, you see. But it was a shock meeting the drill instructors in Tidworth. But it was nothing like... It was like joining the army again. And it was a fantastic level of discipline. In fact, you were supposed to walk about at... this at quick speed, arms going up to shoulder height, and this is to cross a parade ground to go anywhere. And obviously, nobody around, you would start slouching. And then I'm not inventing this. somebody would come leaping out of the bathroom or something and bawl you to attention, and then you'd have to quick march across to them and be rough-tongued, and, you know, that won't do.
But, did it seem like quite an elitist sort of...
It was. Yeah. It was, actually.
So what have gliders been used for so far? I mean, did you know how they were using gliders?
Oh, yes, because the Germans had... they'd had that a glider force to invade... and take a big fortress in Belgium, Ebel or something like that. And they were elite people who were soldiers and good fighting soldiers. And in fact, there was no direct entry into the glider pilot regiment. I mean, there is for the parachute regiment, and there was then. But you had to show yourself to be a competent soldier in another arm. So we had tank people like me, people from various infantry regiments, signalmen, all sorts. And in fact, I was a trooper, and in the intake, there was even one major. There were several captains and more lieutenants, and they were drilled exactly as we were, in the same squads. And when they were bawled at by the Scots Guards instructors, it would be, and it was quite a shock, that the drill sergeant, you know, from the guards, he would stop in front of an officer. I wasn't in the same squad where there was the major, but this was a captain, and he put his face within a couple of inches of the captain's face and said, "Sir, you're a bloody disgrace." But all they had to do was to preface the ticking off with the word "sir." And a lot of them decided that that wasn't for them, so a lot dropped out. A lot more dropped out. And in fact, I nearly dropped out at one stage because I thought it was so ridiculous. Well, for example, on one Saturday, I was up on three charges... just before the snap inspection, I noticed that somebody had pinched my a lace from my gym shoe. Showing what I thought was initiative, I got a length of string, cut it to shape, put that in it. And anyway, this captain came along with the RSM and somebody else, stopped in front of my bed, and this was the first thing to upset him. My cap badge wasn't in the right place. And the instructions in the Fife and Forfers, it was an inch over the left eye. He said, "It's in the wrong place." I said, "Sir, it is in the place as instructed by the Fife and Forfers. Don't argue with me, and take this man's name," you know, the usual stuff. And then the sergeant had spotted the string in there. That was another offence. That was taken down. Oh, and then an idle shave. I'd got a nick where I'd... there. So there were the three. And when I went up before this same officer... Lieutenant Chittleborough, deceased. He was sitting behind a highly scrubbed pine table, I suppose, and he said, you know, "Oh, this is the idle man with the three charges." And you're still not... he didn't say anything about my cap badge, because that was cuffed off. As I was marched in, the sergeant then literally cuffed the berry off my head. But I was going, you know, knees up, this sort of thing, and then halt, which inside a small room reverberated. And this Chittleborough, he was emphasising, you know, the things I'd done, and he was banging on the table, and there was an ink pot. And I... looking not at him, but looking as I'm directed straight at the wall, you know, above his head, I could see with peripheral vision that if he's not careful, that bottle's going to go over. It did go over, and this enraged him, of course. I could see, still looking ahead, I could see the blue-black ink, you know, spreading. And, the number of extra drill parades for this.
So what punishment did you get?
Extra drill parades, which doesn't sound much, but they did run you around at a pace that I'd never met at all in the tanks. Yeah. But...
you mentioned the guards. Did the guards, how were they involved with the glider pilot regiment?
Well, they were selected as instructors, because they then, the guards, I suppose, have got the smartest reputation. Not that I think that's the best reputation. And I think it would have been much more sensible if they'd given us field training. To give you an example... our boots were dubbined in the tanks, and also the brass buttons, we were ordered to rub ink over the brass buttons so that they could lose their luster, and which again is sensible, because although you're not walking around too much in the tanks, you can reveal your position by the flash from a brightly brass button, although you're wearing overalls, so you know where the justification is there, I don't know. But anyway, that was the situation. And I was told that those boots, dubbin boots, I'd got to get that filth off, and the boots to be highly polished. That's a very difficult job, getting dubbin off, and then highly polished, and then the brass had got to gleam, so the tarnished, deliberately tarnished thing from the fifes, that had to be erased completely, and that really thoroughly brassed me off, and I was nearly for giving it up. I don't know whether most people didn't pass the early training there. Now, I don't know if it's because most people decided they'd had enough of this nonsense or physically, found it too demanding. But anyway, I was nearly for... In fact, I wrote home and I said to my father, I'm just about to pack it up. I wasn't unhappy in the tanks, but this rubbish and... I was going to lose the chance to fly, but anyway, my father, by return, sent a letter of encouragement back, and I bet he must have hated himself for doing it when he saw where it led me. But that was it.
Stop you there. Cyril Williams, end of reel 3.